Mr. Aves, real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born within 150 yards of Tower Bridge.
Which year was this?
In 1919.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was a regular soldier who had been wounded at the Battle of Aisne and was discharged with a small pension. I don't know how much it was. And he, like most of the soldiers discharged at that time, I believe they were offered the opportunity of training as a what used to be a cobbler or tailoring. And he chose tailoring. And he did become a tailor, if you like to put it that way. He worked in the rag trade.
Did you go to school in the Tower Bridge area?
No. Yes, I did. I did, in fact, and I only knew this recently, there was a small school at Swan Street, I believe, in that area. And for a short time I went about 3-4 years of age.
So this was Southwark, was it?
No, it wasn't Southwark. It was, I've always referred to it as Stepney or Bethnal Green. It was near Watney Street, Chapel Street and Lemon Street.
How old were you when you left school?
14 when I left school.
Did you get a job?
I got a job because my father had a small workshop in the making ladies' mantles, they used to call it in those days, mantles, for quite high-class garments for Peter Robinson's, which in those days was a fairly good class store, and some of the other major stores, but on a very, very small scale, something in the neighbourhood of 20 or 30 garments weekly, and he had a partner, so it was a very small workshop.
Where were you living when war broke out?
I was living in Tottenham when war broke out.
Did you hear the broadcast of Chamberlain declaring
yes,
war?
Yes, I did.
Under what circumstances?
There were circumstances in which probably I may have been in a minority, but I didn't think we should have gone to war at that time. I had a very strong feeling that it was the wrong thing to be doing, going to war. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if it's any interest, I immediately sat down at the piano and played Roll Out the Bible.
Why?
I don't know. That was just a gesture.
To relieve your feelings?
I suppose so, yes. Yes. Probably to back my family up as well. I don't know. Something like that. Mother and father and brother and aunts that lived with us at the time.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
No, I wasn't. Funnily enough, I don't know if this is interesting or not, but when I joined the King's Regiment in Glasgow, I just missed the beginning of the bombing of London. I left Glasgow after 2 or 3 months. I think we went to Ipswich or somewhere like that, and they bombed Glasgow just after we left. I left Ipswich, and they bombed Ipswich. So somehow or other, for that year, when the bombing started, I managed to dodge it. It wasn't deliberate, but I would have done deliberately if I could, I suppose.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
I was conscripted against my wishes. There's no other way that I would have joined the army. I wasn't I was a patriot, but I believed in that I would fight for my country and fight for my family. I didn't want to die for it or be maimed for it.
When were you conscripted? Do you remember?
Well, it was in September 40.
Where did you go to?
I went to Jordan Hill College at Glasgow for initial training. And I had a series of number events that created a situation where I've always thought 13 was my lucky number, because it was on the 13th of September that I caught a train on 13th platform at Euston to go up to Glasgow, where I joined the 13th Kings, and I was placed in the 13th platoon, and my last four numbers were added up to 13. And so I've always felt 13 has been a lucky number.
How did you take to the training?
I was a very well-behaved young man and very naive, and I felt that I had to do as I was told. I had no qualms about that. I just felt that's what I was there for, to do as I was told. I didn't like it, but I put up with it. I didn't rebel.
How did you get out to the Far East?
After about a year, I suppose, running around England in various spots and enjoying myself quite a bit, we caught the steamship Oronce at Liverpool, and I think it took us about 6 or 8 weeks to get to India on the troop ship, which was an appalling situation to be in, troop ship for the other ranks. Dreadful.
In what?
I don't know if anybody's ever written anything about this, but the conditions in which the troops travelled on the ships to India or where or Singapore or wherever were the most ghastly situations that one could find. Men were crowded, abnormally crowded, into areas where there was hardly room to sleep or to eat or anything. It was absolutely awful. Almost the worst experience of my wartime situation was the traveling across the seas to India, down 7 decks below the surface of the ship. Oh.
Was it mainly because of the discomfort or the food or what?
Well, everything. It was being crowded, having all your kit and equipment stuck somewhere that was hard to separate from other people's. The food was absolutely ghastly. It was stew every day, which one had to take turns going to the galley to carry a stew up steps, in some cases, along corridors or whatever they call them on ships. And very often you spilt half of it if the ship was rolling. And so by the time you came to dish it out on the mess table, the supply had deteriorated, put it that way. And it was boring. It was pretty awful. And a lot of the men were seasick. And so they were crowded together and they were seasick. And for the first part of the journey, certainly, this was awful.
Did you see anything of the conditions for the NCOs and officers?
Ah, well, that's another story. The NCOs probably had similar conditions to us. I think certainly the junior NCOs were with us, I think, as far as I can remember. But, of course, the officers were treated as though they were travelling on a tour of the Far East in luxury conditions, and with, as far as I can see, a full silver service available to them. And they were served by, I believe, the ship's mess crew or waiters in complete different conditions to ourselves. And we weren't supposed to be allowed anywhere near their eating quarters. And I can understand why, because it was, to say the least, we felt it was rather unfair that we were treated so badly. But on the other hand, I can't see how else one could transport all those troops abroad under any other situation, and other conditions, really. But we hated it.
Did you run into the enemy on the way?
We had some trouble off the coast of South Africa, but I suppose we weren't really aware that we were in danger. But we put to sea from Durban, and we had to return to Durban, for there was some trouble, difficulty, I think, with the convoy at that point. And we changed ships, in fact. It may have been that the Oronce had some trouble with its engines, and we changed to the Andes, which was a larger ship at that point.
When did you arrive in India, do you know?
I think it was the end of December 41. I think it was something about that. I think it was after Christmas Day.
Where did you arrive at?
Bombay.
What were your first impressions of India?
We were appalled at the apparent poverty and the beggars that surrounded us. Actually, I think we were on a train or something like that when we first came aware of it. There were some awful sights of people with no legs and people with half faces. They were pretty ghastly. Our first impression was one of extreme poverty in the area where we were at that time.
Where did you go to camp?
Well, we moved to, I don't think we were in Bombay very long. My memory is not very clear on this. We were probably there for a week or so, and then we moved to Secunderabad, which was a very, very nice station. Also, it's near Hyderabad. That's, in fact, the area in which the Nizam of Hyderabad was a ruler. And it was Secunderabad had been an army station, and that's where we went to from Bombay.
Were you still in the 13th Kings?
I was in the 13th Kings, yes.
What were you doing at Secunderabad?
I personally, we were training at Secunderabad, but I was in the dance band. I used to play in the dance band because I'd learned to read music when I was a small boy, and I played the piano and the piano accordion. And so I used to train as well, but we did rather well in the dance band in playing functions of concerts for the men. And we played the officers' club in Secunderabad for the officers to dance with the ladies of the area there. And it was a very, very pleasant spot, the officers' club. I remember the lights and the atmosphere, and we had given a very good meal during the interval, and the officers got to know us, and we were treated with respect because of our ability, I suppose, to entertain.
When did you were you recruited to the Chindits?
Well, that was a blow for those of us that felt we were having it rather cushy in Secunderabad. Rumours were rife in the army. I mean, everybody knew something was going to happen through rumour, and I don't know whether rumour was deliberately set out or not, but it always worked out that rumour was almost fact. And we heard about this man. Some of us knew of Lawrence of Arabia, but we heard about this man, Wingate of Abyssinia, who we felt, before we met him, was some freak or other that had done very well as a guerrilla officer in the war in Eritrea. Or Ethiopia, and we were introduced to him en masse on an occasion that I can't recall where, but he certainly created a great effect on the majority of us. I won't say everybody's as sensitive as everybody else, but I personally felt that I was in the presence of somebody who was really extraordinary, somebody that I'd never, the type of person I had ever come across before. He exuded an aura of power, and yet he didn't speak in that manner. He spoke quietly and convincingly, and we gradually came to the conclusion that he was talking about us, that we were going to be trained to infiltrate the Japanese lines in Burma, and in fact be the first troops to fight back at the Japanese since the debacle of the loss of Burma and the loss of all the other areas, Singapore. And I said he realigned our perceptions of what was possible for ordinary people like ourselves. Certainly that's the impression that I had, and a number of my friends, that here was a man that he lifted us in his address. And then of course we didn't see him, he just went, and we were left recognising that our cushy life in India was coming to an end.
Did Wingate come and visit you in Secunderabad then?
I believe he did, yes. We didn't go to see him. He came to see us. It must have been in Secunderabad. We hadn't left Secunderabad. I'm sure it was there that he came to see us.
And what did he tell you about what your future was going to be?
Well, he told us that we were going to be for a very, very hard time training. And we were going to learn map reading, unarmed combat, and in fact we were going to show the Japanese that the British could do as well as the Japanese and do better, in fact. That was the general picture that one got from his address. And we were just amazed. We were just, I think, we were in awe of him, put it that way.
Did you not feel apprehensive about what he promised?
I think we felt, I think he impressed us to the extent that he convinced us that we could do it. Now that's the best way of putting it, that obviously none of us wanted to leave this pleasant little life we were having, and but he impressed us that we could do it, and we ought to do it. He was a great man.
Then how did you come to leave Secunderabad?
I don't recall exactly, but I believe we must have, in order to catch the train, we must have gone by train to Patharia. That was a small village near Sorgand and Jhansi. Jhansi being a university city, I believe. This small village of Patharia, I gather from subsequent reading that it was the jungle surrounding it was similar to the Burmese area in which we were going to be operating. And the village of Patharia has left memories in my life that I will never forget, or anybody else that was there. Because the training was really very, very hard. We went straight into training up very early in the morning, long marches and indefinite marching, walking and carrying packs, crossing lakes, staying out all night. We were stuck in tents with very, very little space and room. The food was absolutely inadequate. We didn't have enough food. And the food we had was very, very bare in choice. It was very, very hard, and shortly after the introduction to Patheria and its training, the monsoon started. And of course that was absolute hell. We were immersed in water day after day. We were never dry, night or day. We were always wet. All our equipment was wet. There were mud holes 4 or 5 feet deep that people would fall in. At night, we used to be get lost. Couldn't find our way back to our bivouac areas. It was an absolute appalling month. The training in Patheria during monsoon. And it was during this period that really we had our first casualties. A stream used to run through the camp, an ordinary stream, I don't know how wide it would be. This became a raging torrent. The water rose so high that a number of men, in trying to get back to their tents, the bivouac areas, drowned in crossing this torrent. And I suppose we put that down to inexperience. Probably a month or so later, they wouldn't have drowned. We'd have found a method of crossing this river, which we did have to learn anyway, through subsequent months, how to cross these sort of rivers without losing men. But unfortunately, we did lose some men. They drowned, which was a great blow. About the same time, we had the affair of an officer being shot by a private soldier during arms inspection. Unfortunately, when you have arms inspection, you're supposed to clear the breech. This is a part of the method. This officer presumably forgot to tell the men to clear the breech, and when he came to inspect the rifles, there was a shell in the breech, and it was fired, and he was killed. And that was a Jewish officer named Safa. In fact, a very nice man. He died in these circumstances without ever seeing the enemy, and things were tough. They were tough at the time.
How did you cope personally with the training?
Let me say, I was 6 or 7 to 8 years younger than the majority of the King's Regiment. I was one of the young ones. Some of us, a few of us, were younger than the others. And I suppose being younger and not having any family commitments apart from mother and father, I didn't have wife and children as a lot of these men had. I think it was a bit of an adventure, as far as I was concerned. And although I hadn't had a tough life in civilian life, I must have been wiry enough to be able to cope with the difficulties and the hardships. Because in my recollection, I managed fairly well until sickness took over the whole of the battalion, and I went down with malaria. A number of my friends went down with dysentery and malaria. Two of them, one was a sergeant, one was a corporal, taken to Sorba Hospital from the area to die on the same day with dysentery. And it was an awful thing anyway, but something that I've never forgotten since was the fact that their wives met when we were stationed at Burford and became great friends. And they communicated with each other. I knew this because these men were friends of mine, while the men were in India. And they must have been informed of the deaths of their husbands on the same day, because they died the same day of dysentery. And the wives of these two men must have been informed the same day, and when they contacted each other, it must have been a most awful situation. information, and it's really ghastly. And I suppose that's war.
Did you gather what the officers thought of Wingate?
Yes. Many of them hated him. This is probably the junior officers, up to captain. I suppose they're junior officers. As a private soldier, I was only impressed by officers if they were gentlemen officers. If they treated us with respect, I respected them. I didn't respect them if they didn't. If they thought they were superior, I didn't respect them. But I did respect them if they knew that we were people as they were. And some of the men I term as officers and gentlemen, one in particular was David Hastings, who was the son of the KC, famous KC, Sir Patrick Hastings. And he was my platoon officer for a while. He was a very, very fine man indeed. Some of the other officers hated it, and I overheard a Captain Blackburn say to Captain Cottrell, "This man's mad, I'm not going to put up with this, I'm going." And he did, he went. I don't know how he went, but he went. Well, that's it.
How did you come to know Wingate personally?
This was through my ability to play the piano accordion, in fact, which, as far as I knew, we'd left at Secunderabad. I hadn't seen it, I didn't know what they did with it. But one day, Wingate, who was a very religious man apparently, decided to hold a church service in the jungle. He must have asked various column commanders if there was anybody that could provide any music of any kind for the hymns. Because my column commander, who knew me as being part of the dance band and the concert party, introduced me to Wingate to discuss the hymns that we would play or sing on this church service. This was a couple of days before. My column commander was Colonel Jukes, and he told me that the accordion was in store somewhere around there. I don't know where it was, but they found the accordion for me. I met Wingate, and I stood next to him playing the hymns as he conducted the first part of the service. I think the religious officer who was there, I forget who he was, probably took over the rest of the service. So Wingate met me, and I found him a very nice sort of man. He was kind and considerate as far as I was concerned. And whenever we met on a one-to-one basis, that wouldn't be very often, he would say, "How are you getting on? How are you finding it? You know, the training, can you manage the training okay?" And things like that. On one occasion, he said,